Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. Here we go with the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio, and I don't know what's going on, but for some reason, oh, there we go. Let's see if I can get this all to work here, and we'll be all set.
Start spreading the news.
All right, I haven't had much luck with this working, but hopefully Schomburg Stu is in and he can actually talk to us. Stu, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, John?
Hey, it worked. All right, look at that. I couldn't do that with Dan all week. I don't know what the problem was, but it just didn't want to work. Anyways, you want to call into the podcast now, 646-478-3653 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so hopefully you got over there in time to check the Wednesday one out because the Saturday one will be popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. You can give that a like while you're over there. We greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, there's also the Twitter feed, which is, oh, come on, we know this by now, it's at Sports Time Radio. You can find me on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, but sadly still no Stu on Twitter. One of these days it'll happen, we know, but not as of yet. So,
Hoping, I'm sure.
Yes. So, like my mom said, you know, wish in one hand and poop in the other and see which one fills up faster. Oh,
so. I like that. I like that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, the owners made another proposal to the players. This time they actually increased the pro rate of pay to either 80 or 85%, depending on which source you listen to. And now it's already been reported that the players will reject this deal because they will not accept anything but 100% of their prorated pay. So they are giving absolutely nothing back. There are also some reports right now that a lot of players are fed up and they just want a 50-game season. So you and I have talked all along. I'm to the point now where I think the season is dead, and they're in the process of killing baseball in a hole. If they play 50 games, are you even going to care?
No, that's ridiculous. I mean, come on. Who's going to pay attention to a 50-game season? Not me, that's for
sure. Here's the even funnier thing. Do you remember who won the World Series last year? Do you remember what team that was?
Yes, I certainly do.
Do you know that they started out? You know they started out 19-31 in their first 50 games last year? And ended up being the best team in baseball.
Yeah, that's
so.
I don't think 50 games is quite enough, right? Well, look at it this way. Would 81 games have been enough for them last season to make the playoffs?
At least I don't remember where they were at that point. I think they still may have snuck in that. If you win the World Series in a 50-game season, can you really count it?
I just can't see it happening, and I'm along with you on this one. I think there won't be any baseball this year. I'd be very surprised if there was.
Dan and I talked about this earlier in the week, and, you know, I know the players don't care, and I know there's people out there who think, oh, God, they care so much about the fans. This proves completely to you that they don't give a crap about you, all right? You know, because to not be even flexible from where they are, like, I could understand they didn't want that first pay cut because it was gigantic. But, you know, now we're in a working area here. You know, the owners were at 75%. If they came up to 80 or 85, you're in a working area for a very shortened season. And I know, okay, you want your money. Hopefully you don't need it because most of you have made billions, if millions, if not billions of dollars playing baseball. So, let's sit down and let's work this out. It just seems like if this isn't giving us all our money, we're going to walk away.
Well, you said that the players are already going to reject this deal, correct?
Yeah. They have till Sunday, but it's already being reported that they'll reject it because of the proliferation of salary.
Well, I hope the players realize that let's assume that you're correct, and I think you are, that they're going to reject it. That means that Monday is June 15th. Now, how could you possibly anticipate there could be a season? There's still spring training. There's still schedules to set up. How could anybody think that there's going to be a season when June 15th rolls around and there has been nothing settled one way or the other regarding any kind of agreement between the players and management?
You know, and the weird thing about this, and I know this is another thing the players don't care about, but this comes from a fan's point of view. The owners have set them up with these proposals to come off looking like greedy bastards, and they've literally walked right into every setup the owners have given them, because when it comes to money, they're not willing to give either way. So in reality, they're the ones who are coming off looking bad in front of the fans. You know, and again, the bottom line is, I know they don't care, but when they're going to start to care is when these contracts are up and they're going to have their hands out looking for hundreds of millions of dollars, and the owners aren't going to have them because you're going to have people who just aren't going to go back to the ballpark after this.
Yeah. Let's assume for the moment that we're correct and there will not be a season in 2020, but there will be one in 2021. Are you saying, and I think you're probably right, is that the day of the megabuck contract is history if that happens?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, that's obviously, I think we talked about it last week, they have to make the decision, if there is no baseball, how does this count? Because, you know, we talked about the Chris Bryant situation. Is he still technically with the Cubs for 2 years because he acquired no service time towards his arbitration? So does that leave him with 2 years left? Or do they somehow end up counting some time and it goes to just the one? I know the contracts can still expire because they're dated. You know, this is the end date of your contract. This is where you're released, so you can become a free agent. It's these arbitration guys that I think might be in some trouble here with this, you know, because of the way these things are worded. And, you know, I mean, if I'm an owner, I'm not willing to give my guy service time for him not doing anything for me.
And I have to agree with the owners in this one. I think that the 2 years will remain intact for the following year in 2021.
You know, because that's the way I would look at it. Their arbitration salary should just immediately roll over because they didn't play. So you can't discuss a new contract because there's no numbers to look at. So you immediately go, well, here's what you were awarded. Here's what you play for. And that sits right where, you know, it belongs. And, you know, that includes, I believe, Mookie Betts was in his last year of arbitration.
Yeah.
So he should have fallen into the same category as Chris Bryant. And, obviously there's a ton of other ones. I just remember the Chris Bryant right away because, you know, he was the one who went to court over it. You know, he had the grievance and, you know, all that stuff. But I'm honestly starting to think that we're going to see a season. We won't see a season this year. We're going to get a season in 2021, and then I believe we're going to get a strike or a lockout in 2022, and they're just going to bury the game, and then by the time they come back, it's going to be too late.
Yeah, I'm not even sure there's going to be a season in 2021 if the players don't agree with the ruling that the arbitration time will remain the same as it has been. And since there's no baseball this year, There's no baseball this year. Actually, 2 years is 2 years.
I heard today from Jeff Paston, he was reporting on the Mickey Mouse Network, that they'll have to come back next year, regardless of what goes on, you know, in the off season, because like the arbitration will be a grievance hearing, just like Chris Bryant's. You know, it won't have anything to do with any of that stuff. It's just, it's a win or lose. You either win it or you lose it. So it can't affect anything. And you got to remember, the majority of those guys are a minority of the Major League Baseball players. So, you know, the other guys like the Harpers and Machados and Trouts and the big buck guys aren't going to walk away from their money for a small amount of players, no matter what the union tells them. So we'll get a season next year.
Yeah, here's a question regarding that.
Well,
here's
before you jump in and ask that, I guess there's the opportunity that like Bryant and those guys could hold out. I guess that could be a possibility. But other than that, I don't know. All right, what were you going to ask?
I was going to say this. Let's assume you're right, and there will be a baseball season next year. And let's say for the sake of argument that by 2021, the pandemic problem that we had this year will not be there. Let's say it's where everything is healthy, everything's ready to go forward with a normal season of baseball. Will the crowds at Wrigley, Fenway, Yankee Stadium, the big ballparks like that that always draw capacity crowds, will they draw capacity crowds next season anyway?
You know, I think, you know, the places like Wrigley and Fenway might do okay because they're still tourist attractions. You know, whether you like it or not as a Cub fan, you get a lot of people in that building who don't know diddly squat about baseball. They're just there to see Wrigley. You know, and the same thing with Fenway because of what they are. You know, the Yankees have had a difficult time selling out the ballpark since they built the new one because it's extremely expensive to go to a game in that new Yankee Stadium. So it's difficult there. But, yeah, I think, you know, Wrigley and Fenway could have a chance. The other ballparks I'm not so sure of unless they – you know, they have a, you know, something that can bring people in, you know, other than baseball.
Now, what about St. Louis, a traditionally a great baseball town? You think there'll be a reduction in their salary and in their attendance records for 2021?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think everybody goes back, not only just because of the situation we've got going on here, but you got to remember that there's a lot of people not working currently. So, you know, it's going to be difficult. And I mean, we know the prices at the stadiums are out of control. So, you know, I think it's going to be really tough for a lot of people to be able to just buy tickets.
You actually see the possibility of, say, in 5 years' time, that baseball will be a distant memory and will no longer exist as a spectator sport?
You know, maybe not 5 years, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it slowly starts to slip and it ends up where we talk about it. You know, it becomes treated like hockey is treated, where it's one of the big four sports, but most people don't consider it a big four sport.
And I would hate to see that happen because I've always considered baseball to be the national pastime. But, of course,
yeah,
I'm a lot older than the younger generation of fans, and they probably don't look at it the same way as I do.
No, why? You know, I don't think they look at, you know, they don't look at anything for more than a minute or two at a time. So you don't have to worry about them, you know, looking at anything. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
You know, the tough part here, you know, it's sad. You know, because it's all going to boil down to money, and neither side is smart enough to realize what it's like to be a fan. You know, they all talk a good game, but you got to remember everybody has a public, you know, a public publicity agent, some kind of public relations person to help them do that. They, you know, they don't understand, you know, any of this other, you know, other stuff that, that goes on in people's lives. And, you know, in reality, they don't care if you can afford a ticket to the game or not.
No.
You know, if you show up late, if not, they figure somebody else is going to buy that ticket.
Yeah. As I've told you before, we're a very forgiving nation. But I'm not so sure that that's going to be the case this time. I think there's going to be a lot of animosity with the fans over the situation.
Well, that, and then, you know, if you add in, if there's even talk of a strike or a lockout, that's just going to make it even worse next year. You know, because that's going to be hung over everybody's head all season long, and people are just going to be like, well, why am I going to bother? They're not going to be playing next year anyways.
Yeah, can you imagine that? There's baseball finally comes back next season after not playing this year, a complete 2021 season, and then 2022 comes around and there's a strike.
Yeah. So, or to be fair, a lockout. The owners could decide to lock
a
the
lockout.
Players out. I don't.
A lockout.
You know, I don't. I, you know, I know right now I seem like anti-player, but it's not so much that I'm anti-player. It's just they're being made to look stupid and they're falling right into the trap. You know, I literally feel like I'm watching a cartoon and, you know, Bugs Bunny has the string, you know, tied to the stick and the box is elevated waiting for, you know, Elmer Fudd to walk in without his gun now because Elmer Fudd can't have a gun, you know, and pick up whatever Bugs set out for him.
Yeah, yeah, I could see these things happening, and you would think the players would be a little bit smarter this time and do some kind of a make some kind of a compromise, but it certainly doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon, if any, if at all this year.
So yeah, and you know the money appears to be the lone holdup. You know, it seems like we're set on everybody else. You know, everything else. You know, they were. You know, they were both, you know, seemed willing to give us a number of games. You know, I know the only thing the players wanted is they wanted to be done before November. So the schedule was set up by the owners to be done before November. You know, even though 76 games, it won't be as big as a joke as 50, but it'll still be a huge joke. And it just appears to be the money that is the holdup here.
And you would think that there would be some other considerations to take regarding the current virus problem. I mean, aren't the players concerned a little bit about their well-being and their health for themselves and their families? Or is money
number one?
Money is still number one, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Money is always going to be number one when it comes to the big-time athletes like this. It's never ever going to be any different. And, you know, they have, you know, what appear to be really good protocols in place as long as they follow them. You know, because I know, like, I was reading today, and I know it's a different sport, but the NFL's policies are so strict on what teams have to do in their locker rooms that, like, today, Baltimore Ravens head coach Jim Harbaugh came out and complained about it. Said it's impossible for them to meet all these guidelines because of what the NFL wants done in cleaning the locker rooms and stuff to prevent the virus.
Yeah, exactly right. And the NFL's in a very good spot, though. They're in a very favorable spot because of when the season starts and when this thing has happened, and it looks like they're going to reap the benefits. And I think that. And I'm assuming, yes, there'll be a full NFL season, maybe even some fans in the stands half full, three quarters full. They're going to have a monster season rating-wise.
Off the charts. Yeah. You know, you've got to figure now, if NASCAR is going to start letting fans in, you know, they're going to have a race coming up here where they're going to allow 5,000 fans to be in the bleachers or the seats, wherever, however you want to describe it. You know, if they're going to start letting people in, this is a perfect test for, like, the NFL to see how that goes, because then, you know, they're, what, a few months away from starting. By then, you'll have a complete test of how this worked out for NASCAR. You'll be able to allow a certain amount of people in your, you know, maybe season ticket holders only.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think that would have to be the number one priority, getting the people with the season ticket holders would have to be the first priority to get in to see the games.
So, because, that may be their big saving grace. And, I mean, again, eventually we've got to get to the point where you got to start letting people live their lives, whether they want to be precautionary or if they want to be nuts like, some people have been, whichever way you want to go. You've got to, you can't keep everybody locked up forever.
No, that's for sure. And talking about the NFL, you're talking about the NFL briefly there before. What percentage of the fans in a typical NFL game are season ticket holders? Would you say the great majority of fans for that game are season ticket holders as compared to just a walk-up, if any walk-ups even exist anymore in the NFL?
Yeah, well, I don't think walk-ups exist in too many sports now. Everything is done through those ticket agencies and all that other stuff. But, I think it's, I would have to say that it's probably more than 50%. I wouldn't know an exact number, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was more than 50% of the fans were season ticket holders.
Yeah, I would think even higher than that.
Of course, depending on which team you were, because let's face it, there's a lot of teams that couldn't give away tickets if they had to. So
that's another issue. And I remember reading about, for example, what the USA Today predicted for the Bears to wind up winning this year. And it doesn't sound very exciting if you're a season ticket holder.
Yeah, and I do know season ticket holders that actually just have their season tickets. They hung on to them so they can sell them and make money. So, this, I don't know if this will be the year for that or not. It'll be quite interesting to see how that goes. But, if you're a season ticket holder in a big quality market where the team is good, and you've got decent seats, you can make a lot of money just by selling the tickets.
Yeah, exactly right. I wonder how the IRS treats that. Is it going to even check on those things and see?
Yeah, I'm trying to guess that it's going to be probably, that's probably pretty difficult to check. How do you prove he didn't go to the game?
Yeah, it's true. But, we are all going to be looking forward to the NFL season in 2020, 2021 for sure.
So, yeah, because, slowly but surely, we thought the NHL and the NBA had all their stuff worked out, but apparently there's still quite a few things. I know especially the NBA is going to have to overcome. I haven't heard too much from the NHL players, but I'm not surprised by this either. There's a lot of NBA players whining that they don't want to do this. They don't want to come to Orlando and play out the rest of the season. And obviously, now the NBA has already said if you don't want to come back, you don't have to. They completely understand if, you don't feel safe or whatever, whatever you got going on, there will be no punishment. Of course, the punishment becomes when you don't show up trying to explain it to your teammates. Because even though they're going to say, oh, yeah, we understand, they don't understand because they're there and you're not.
And you mentioned the NBA, of course, and believe it or not, and I don't know if you saw this article, but not as all being very happy in the NHL at the moment either. Patrick Kane, I don't know if you saw that article today, Patrick Kane was still questioning whether the 10th of July, I believe he mentioned, is very viable for training camp. He's a little concerned about that. So it's not all that easy.
Yeah, a lot of the facilities have opened up for the NHL players, but not a lot of players have reported to do, the skate arounds and stuff. So there's a lot of them are still staying away. I've heard more of it from the NBA standpoint, and that doesn't surprise me because let's face it, out of the major sports, the NBA players are the biggest crybabies out of all of them. So I'm not shocked at all that there's basketball players out there whining about this. And, in reality, I won't be surprised if, you know, there are a few of them that decide they're not going to come back and do it, even if it's proven to be 100% safe.
And what about the foreign-born players in both the NHL and the NBA? I'm talking the ones that live in Russia, Europe. Are they going to have a tough time kind of getting back here to even start training camp on that time?
They eased some of the flight restrictions from, you know, Russia and Europe a week or two ago, I saw on the news. So they should have a little easier time getting back. You know what maybe, you know, I mean, the thing obviously I don't know about because I don't live there, I don't know what Canada's doing. So some of these guys have to fly into Canada because that's where they play, you know, or that's the team they're on. You know, their rules may be completely different than ours.
Well,
so
it certainly
seems
exactly right. And there certainly seems to be some disorganization in both leagues regarding this when it starts. My question is this. After the training camps are over, a few exhibition games are played, what quality of play will we get from both the NBA and the NBA and the NHL when the season starts? Will it be as good as we expect it to be, or will it be sloppy and not organized in terms of the both hockey and basketball?
With this new style of NBA, I don't think there's going to be a lot of difference because it's easy to stand around and shoot three-pointers. These guys are professional.
Yeah.
They do it all the time. You know, what we may have noticed, but they don't play it, is if they play defense, we might notice that there's a lack of defense. You know, like I assume there would be a lack of hustle in the NBA, but there's already a lack of hustle in the NBA. So, I don't think we'll notice that much difference. Hockey, I do wonder, because, you know, practice isn't like a game in hockey. In the NBA, you can simulate pretty close to what goes on in a game because, like I said, you stand around at the three-point line, you shoot the ball.
Yeah.
All you got to
do
is get the pointing in and you're in an NBA game. Hockey, it's a little different because, you know, they don't hit in practice. You don't block shots in practice. You know, there's a lot of inside things in the game. So I think with hockey, either – what I'm guessing is we're going to see large amounts of line changes right away. You know, literally lines being on the line for only maybe 30 or 45 seconds, and then you're looking to get your guys off. Or else we're just going to see it's going to be a slop fest if guys are stuck on the ice trying to get up and down because, you know, they're just not going to be used to it.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a lot more offsides than normal. NHL game.
You know, I won't be surprised if there's more offsides and more penalties because, you know, guys are going to hold and grab and, you know, try to slow these guys down just to keep up with them. So, I think, you know, as much as I was looking forward to that returning, because now I'm not actually sure if we're going to get that one either. I don't know if it's going to be good hockey. It may be hockey, but I don't know if it's going to be good.
Yeah, it probably won't be up to the normal standards. At best.
So yeah, that'll be something, you know, we'll have to look for. And again, that's if they get up and going now, because, you know, like you said, you know, Patrick Kane has had some concerns. I'm sure there's other players, you know, who also have concerns, even though it does seem like the leagues are really going out of their way to really take full precautions with, you know, preventing the spread of the virus or anybody catching the virus. You know, they've got their testing in and their cleaning is all set. And I don't know what else these players would want them to do.
Yeah. Here's a doomsday scenario for you. What happens if one team, when they start playing for real, either NHL, NBA, what happens if one or two players on one of the teams comes down with the virus? What does the league do then?
You know what's weird is nobody has answered that question. I don't even know if it's been asked. Because I think you brought that up a week or two ago, and I have no idea what they'll do. You know, nobody has said, here's what happens if, you know, like the Japanese Baseball League, they were just getting ready to start their exhibition season, and two players tested positive, and they shut everything down. So I would assume – you know, and I know assuming makes an ass out of you and me, but I would assume that that would be the functionality here, wouldn't it? I mean, you can't just eliminate a team and keep going.
No, I think you're right. If it happened, one or two players in a team got it, I think the season's over. That's it. They cannot continue.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, and then, you know, because obviously if that would happen, then if I had any concerns as a player beforehand, well, now they're really amped up because it actually happened. You know, because in all honesty, I think a lot of these players who crying about coming back, especially in the NBA, I just don't think they really want to come back. You know, I think they were just kind of hoping they would wipe out the season and we would start again next year. So, what I've noticed is the players who have talked about not coming back are the players who are on teams that, even though they're in this new playoff format, have absolutely no chance to win it.
Yeah, yeah. And we know how much how big a factor that is in the NBA and not so much in the NHL.
Yeah, right, because, you know, I mean, the Washington Wizards got in as the last team in the East, but I don't think anybody out there is betting on them to get in the NBA championship.
Yeah, I think we can eliminate them as a bona fide contender, that's for sure.
I mean, I don't think anybody would even bet on them to win a first-round series. even in this, odd NBA setup, you know, if we don't end up with some type of Lakers, Clippers, Bucks final, something went really wrong.
Well, you know the Lakers are going to be in the finals. That's pretty much a given.
Because that's
what the league and the networks want, and they're going to get somehow.
Well, they would take the Clippers because it is a Los Angeles team, and they have Kawhi Leonard. So that would be an acceptable swap. But, yeah, I think the only Eastern Conference team anybody wants to see is Milwaukee, aren't they?
Well, they're far and above the best team in the East, and you would think that you'd want to see them in the finals.
So, yeah, because I'm trying – obviously Toronto was a nice story last year, but without Kawhi Leonard, you know, there's not that really, you know, attraction that there was last year. And I'm trying to remember who else. I got to look at the standings here. Well, I guess Boston being Boston would be okay because at least they have some name value. But yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, looking, I mean, it's, you know, Miami, Indiana, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Orlando, and Washington are the remaining teams, you know, in the East. So yeah, there's not a lot of choices. I'm sure people would be excited to see Philadelphia just because of the young athletic team they are, but they would probably get beat 4 straight by the Lakers or the Clippers or 4-1. It would end up something like that.
Well, Boston is kind of a story team. They've had so much success over the years in the NBA, and I guess if they got involved, there would be some kind of interest.
Yeah, well, you know, if you think about it, if they ended up with a Lakers-Celtics final, they could dig into all that nostalgia and history because the teams have faced off so many times, you know, with so many great players that, I think that would be acceptable. But if you got, you know, if you got Clippers, Celtics, I don't think it would be the same.
No, it would not. It definitely wouldn't. I would see a much smaller rating if it were Clippers, Celtics, as compared to Lakers-Celtics. I think the ratings will be much, much higher. And, of course, the league and the ABC are going to work to get that accomplished, aren't they?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think, you know, like you mentioned, they want to see the Lakers. I think we're going to get the Lakers. You know, the NBA has this magical way of giving the television providers what they want when it comes to playoffs. I don't know how that happens. I'm not saying it's fixed, but it's fixed. You know, there's just that little setup of they know how to, you know, have the refs make the right call in the right situation to go against the wrong guys and ask Draymond Green about being suspended in a critical game in the finals, you know, when, you know, they easily should have beaten the Cavaliers and ended up losing that series. But, you know, they needed LeBron to win something so they could do the rematch the next year. And it's the way things work in the NBA.
Yeah, it's not pleasant when the referees take the game out of hand, and instead of being a player league, it becomes the referees making a crucial call that affects the team for the playoffs.
Well, you know, I mean, they're only doing what they're told. They're only following, you know, especially in the finals or, you know, getting to the finals, they're only following the league derivative, you know, whoever the league wants there, however the league wants to get them there. You know, the refs are just, they're just doing their job. They're making sure it happens.
Yeah. I'm always relate to the Hugh Howland's phantom foul call against Scottie Pippen when Jordan wasn't playing and they made the two free throws to lose that game and shut the Bulls out of the playoffs. And the replay shows that Pippen never touched the Knick player. But
yeah, and to be fair, Hugh Howland's really hated Scottie Pippen as well, so that didn't help the situation either.
No. But that is one of the most horrible calls I've ever seen in an NBA game, and there's been a lot of them.
But you know, again, that's how they do it. they want LeBron James in the finals, especially after as bad as the ratings were last year. So, but I did see something interesting. I had to ask you this because this popped up on my Twitter page, and somebody listed the all-time greatest Lakers and had LeBron James as the greatest Laker of all time. I believe he's played two or three seasons, or I think this is two, with the Lakers. So that puts him ahead of a bunch of guys who don't need last names: Magic, Wilt, Kareem. Then if you want to look it up, kids, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor. There's been some really great players that have donned a Laker uniform.
Don't forget Kobe.
Kobe, obviously. But they played there for years. Does 2 years of LeBron being there make him the all-time greatest Laker?
No way. Absolutely not. Absolutely.
I mean, if I'm Magic,
how can I make a comparison with Jerry West or Kobe or any of the other ones, Elgin Baylor, any of them who sustained success for so many years, and you got one guy playing 2 years for the Lakers and he's the best Laker of all time? I just can't see it.
And you people wonder how good Jerry West was. He's the logo on the NBA basketball. That's how good Jerry West was, guys. So.
Yeah, I don't know how many more years that James is going to play, but let's see him play. Well, can he play another five, six years? I suppose he can, but then we can make some comparisons that make sense.
Yeah, well, you know, he wants to hang around till his kid gets in the league, and I think that's 3 or 4 years away, maybe. I don't remember how old the kid is. But I'm sure he's not going to go to college. He's just going to come straight in the league and, you know, so no matter how good he is, even if he's not good enough, he's going to go straight from high school right into the pros. But that just kind of baffled me. Now, you know, and I'm not saying LeBron's not an all-time great player. He's probably the second best player behind Jordan, no doubt. I know there's people who have other people in front, you know, maybe he's third or, you know, whatever. And I'm sure some people think he's the greatest, but to give him the award, if you want to tell me he's the all-time greatest Cavalier, I'm right there with you, but not 2 years on the Laker.
No.
Laker.
And there was a, by the way, there was an interesting article. I forgot, one of the sports papers or online a few weeks ago about stating that Jordan would have tore James up with his defense.
Oh, yeah.
But of course, these scenarios, it's easy. It's nice to talk about, fun to talk about, but you can't prove it one way or the other. It's impossible.
Yeah, the thing that's always going to separate anybody playing in this era to anybody who played the game before is the fact that anybody who played before played defense and had to play against defense.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that they're showing some Bulls games now from 10 years ago. Of course, they had a better team then. There was defense then. Believe it or not, only 10 years ago, in 2010, there was actually defense in the NBA. When did that stop? 5 years ago?
Oh, I think it's been longer than that now.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe, but 10 years ago, they're shown some games, and there was actual defense.
So yeah, I'm trying. I can't remember when they stopped playing defense, but it may have been, you know, just after that when they stopped playing defense.
And that to me has ruined the game of professional basketball.
So yeah, because if you play defense now, you're called for fouls. So.
Yeah, it is, and the game that the scores have gotten higher and higher every year, even in the playoffs, which was unheard of years ago.
Oh yeah, I mean it's ridiculous when you turn on a game, and I mean, you know, for a while, you know, it used to be the Denver Nuggets were the only team that put up big numbers because they got up and down the court when they, when they came in from the NBA and they could really score, or the ABA, excuse me. But
right.
They were the only team. Now you turn a game on, and if it's not, 120 to 110, you can't figure out what's going on.
And that's a low-scoring game.
So...
Yeah, it's really too bad what has happened in the NBA, and it really detracts from the game.
Yeah, I mean it's just no fun to watch, because I mean you look at it and it's like I've said before, it's a guy who's gonna go all the way to the hoop and dunk, or if he loses his dribble or he does happen to see somebody in front of him. He throws it out to one of the other four guys standing at the three-point line, and they shoot the three.
Yeah, the rebounding doesn't seem as fierce as it was in years past.
Well, I laughed yesterday. I was perusing around, and I know it's a name a lot of NBA people know, and he actually almost got voted into the All-Star game, even though he didn't deserve it. But there's a player on the Celtics by the name of Taco Fall, who happens to be 7'5". And there was a little blurb about him yesterday that, and I'm sure you probably know where I'm going to go with this, but I'll give you one guess what he's been working on since the NBA has been shut down.
Well, free throws, I would think, myself. My first guess.
He's been working on a three-point shot.
Well, there aren't too many guys that size that are going to be working in a three-point shot, but is that what the NBA has become now?
That's what the NBA has become now. I'm 7'5", and I want to shoot threes. I don't care about those rebounds. And now this guy, I believe this guy can actually dunk without jumping. He's one of those guys. You know, he's so tall, and he's got the long arms. But, yeah, he doesn't care. I'm going to go shoot threes.
Yeah, the game has really taken a downward turn over the past. Well, let's say I said there appeared to be defense 10 years ago. Let's say 6 or 7 years now. It's come down to this. Maybe the Golden State era started it, possibly.
Yeah, that was kind of where it started. That's kind of where the three-pointer became in vogue. Was with those Warriors teams that started winning, because then teams realized you didn't need big guys. Now in the NBA, the center position is basically null and void. I think even in the All-Star game now, you don't vote for a center, you vote for three forwards.
Yeah, things have changed dramatically and not in a good way.
No. So that's the frightening thing with it. But, they're giving the fans what the fans want. You know, they want offense. You know, they want to see the ball up and down the court. They want to see the three-pointers. You know, this is what all their marketing research points to that their fans want. So they're giving it to them.
Well, that's a new fan for you. I'm just the opposite. I still go for a low-scoring game, and even a 100-92 game I would enjoy, but you don't see them anymore.
Well, remember, we don't fit into that, what is it, 18
no.
to 45-year traffic anymore, so they
yeah.
don't care what we think.
Yeah, the demographics aren't in our direction,
yeah.
especially mine,
so,
especially mine. Maybe
we don't count it all, you know, any of that stuff. We no longer matter. It's the, you know, that, and, you know, even younger than 18 now, because you got to get kids interested in the game, you know, which, like I said, has always been baseball's problem, you know, because kids just don't have the attention span now to sit down and watch a baseball game because, you know, it can get dragged out and there's, you know, a lot of stoppages where, you know, the NBA, with the exception of the last, you know, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, there's normally,
yeah.
you know, something going on all the time.
If a father spends huge bucks and takes his 12-year-old son to an NBA game, what percentage of the game would the son watch, or how much time would he be spending on his iPhone?
Well, I think they still spend the majority of the time on their phone, even when they're there. So, you know, you can't defeat that animal. It's just one of those things. You know, if they've got the phone with them, they're going to be on it.
Yep, and that's what we have to contend with now.
So, because yeah, I mean, you've seen it, you know, because that's like when they kept talking about people getting hit by foul balls at baseball games, you know, I kept telling myself, well, get off your damn phone and pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah, I'm sure that's happened. More often than not, when someone gets hit, they weren't paying attention to the game. They're on the phone or doing something else, and that's why it always frightens me when I see some babies at a basketball game. And remember that one father that caught the foul ball? He had his baby in
yeah.
one of those carriers and reached up and caught the foul ball with one hand and got a nice hand from the crowd. But my goodness. How dangerous can that be? How dangerous is that?
No, there's been a few of them out there, you know, with the, you know, with the, you know, parents. Oh, it always seems to be fathers who are holding the baby and catching the baseball. The mothers are a little smarter and don't try to do that. So.
Well, you remember what happened with Albert Almora Jr. last year with that foul ball,
yeah.
which was just a terrible, terrible incident.
Yeah, unfortunately, and that's the one thing. I mean, if you're going to bring a small child to a ballpark, you really have to be cautious. You know, and I believe that girl recovered. I believe she's okay. So that was the big plus there. But yeah,
well,
it's,
unfortunately,
you know,
she's recovered, by the way, but she has some brain damage to this day. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to ever recover 100%, but she has recovered to some. Yeah, if she's alive, and you know, that ball comes off the bat like that, and a defenseless child in the stands, it would behoove the parents to be at least paying some kind of attention to what's going on.
You know what I mean? If you want to, you know, you want to get on your phone, you want to take pictures, you want to do whatever, do it between innings. So.
Yeah. And there were some rule changes because of what happened then, and I guess some ballparks, including the White Sox Park, have put more netting up because of that incident.
Yeah, well, they instituted that as a rule that the team had to go out and put netting up. So, you know, there are a lot of teams who there were some teams that were doing it before they instituted the rule, but now, you know, they've said, yeah, it's got to go up, and you know, it makes sense, you know, especially in this day and age where, you know, people pay more attention to their technology than what's going on.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's what you need is, you know, something,
yeah.
you know, something
right.
terminal has.
Yeah, it makes it doubly dangerous as compared to what happened, what could have occurred 10, 15, 20 years ago.
you know, but yeah, unfortunately that's our, that's our society now. You know, it's more important to be that, you know, that first person with the picture on Twitter or Instagram or, you know, get your TikTok video than it is to pay attention to what's going on in the game.
Well, as the old Frank Sinatra song goes, that's life. That's what the people say. And that's
yeah.
the way it is.
Well, you know, and we, you know, we'll have to see. I don't know if or how or any of that changes.
No, it's not going to change. Probably get worse before it gets better.
It could be, you know, maybe every major league ballpark should install, like, you know, a cell phone blocker so you can't use the phone.
That's a good idea. But can you imagine the complaints of that would happen?
Well, there were, remember when it was football, though, when the 49ers built their new stadium, there were complaints because first off, the Wi-Fi connections weren't very good, and then secondly, they wanted to charge reporters for using them. So that was a big fiasco at first. In the end, they ended up getting their free Wi-Fi and everything, but I was just kind of like, they should have charged them.
Yeah, but you knew that wasn't going to happen. Eventually, that rule would be rescinded, and it was.
Yeah, but yeah, I thought, you know, but yeah, I remember listening to them complain about that, you know, just like, oh no, it's good Lord, they don't have Wi-Fi. What are we going to do? I might have to write something down by hand.
Yeah, but the people are not used to anything but what our current technology affords them.
So. You know, and then, you know, I thought we're running out of time. I was wondering if you happened to catch up on the big wrestling story coming out yesterday. Did you see that Vince McMahon demoted Paul Heyman? He'll no longer be the lead writer on Monday Night Raw, and they're going to combine the writing team so that Bruce Pritchard, who, if older fans will remember, his brother Love, he's going to lead both writing teams. So
Heyman is now just considered a non-screen personality. Is that what they said?
Yeah, he's back to just being Brock Lesnar's manager.
Now, is Brock Lesnar still in the WWE, or is he gone? Or
yeah,
what?
He's under contract. They just haven't needed him since he lost the title, so he's just on vacation more or less.
I will have to say Paul Heyman cuts a pretty good promo. Long-winded, but
yeah.
but it's a good one.
No, he's the perfect mouthpiece for Lesnar because Lesnar's he's clueless on the microphone. So.
But really, the as we're talking about wrestling, the WWE has really gone to an all-time low as far as I'm concerned with this current incident that they're doing with trying to relate with Jeff Hardy's actual real-life demons and incorporating it into an absolutely tasteless storyline on TV. I won't even mention what's going to happen tonight because the show has been pre-taped.
You know, I mentioned to you earlier, this is the second time they've done this. They did this a years ago with Shawn Michaels. So, and it's funny because it's going to be the exact same angle because Shawn Michaels did it to Vince McMahon what Jeff Hardy's going to do to Sheamus that you didn't want to give away. It's the exact same angle laid out, and I will laugh so hard if they put a curtain up for Hardy to stand in while he's doing that because that's what they did to Michaels. And, I mean, of course, it's apple juice, but, you know, that's how it works out. So, and, you know, I know we gave a lot.
You're saying it's not the real deal, huh?
No, you know, it's not. You know, I know I gave a lot away there, but it's a repeat angle. You know, just like a lot of stuff in professional wrestling is, they've done this before.
Yeah, I always say a good angle is worth repeating, and boy, they don't seem to come up with anything innovative anymore, do they?
No, well, you know, their claim to fame was that, you know, the match that's been already been taped for their pay-per-view this Sunday was going to be the greatest wrestling match ever. Probably so far from the truth, it's not even funny.
Yeah, the Ric Flair, I think, came up with something about, don't forget about my match against Ricky Steamboat being the should be the greatest match ever.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't consider that the greatest match ever.
You know, there's a really good match with Savage and Steamboat at a WrestleMania.
Yeah,
you know, if you really want to go back, you know, you can find some, you know, there are some really good matches that this isn't even going to compare to. If it's an average match, we'll be lucky. I did hear, or I did read somewhere that they taped 30 to 35 minutes of this match. Now, they don't know if they're going to show it all because, you know, there's going to be some editing involved since it was pre-taped, and they're WWE is really into doing these cinematic matches now. They think this is a great idea. So we're going to get some type of version, but they've got 30 to 35 minutes worth of film to work with. So you got to figure, what, we'll get a 25-minute match?
Now, is this going to be just a standard match? There's no gimmick match like they did with that crazy match they did behind the scenes a couple of pay-per-views ago.
Right, no, allegedly it's the greatest wrestling match ever. So as far as I know, it's just a wrestling match.
Well, I suggest to the fans who are listening, if they want to see some great wrestling matches, well, you'll probably say it's boring, but go look at the 60-minute draw that's available on YouTube between Luthez and Vern Gagne, or Luthez and Buddy Rogers, if you want to see a great wrestling match. But they're not going to do it, are they?
Well, you know, some might. You know, you never know. I mean, you know, if you don't want to go that far back, there are some really good stuff from, like, the old WCW Clash of Champions. Ric Flair and Barry Windham have a 45-minute draw that is just fantastic. You know, if you want to go back that far, we've mentioned Flair Steamboat. There's Flair Savage, Savage Steamboat. You know, you can really find these things if you're looking for great wrestling, which this isn't. You know, it may be good. It's not going to be the greatest wrestling match. You know, it's just
no
ridiculous that they even went with this. But that's why they don't talk about it.
Yeah, there was even a 45-minute draw on the WCW show between Ric Flair and Sting. That was excellent. Also, if you remember that one. In fact,
which is
Sting
hard to believe.
Years later, Sting said that that Flair just carried the – told him what to do the entire match and made the match as good as it was. So I have to give Sting credit for being that gracious about it. Of course, this took place many years after the match actually occurred.
Yeah, that's a huge credit to Flair's talent that he could get 45 minutes out of Sting. So
yeah, for sure. And you have to give the – I never thought Flair was the greatest wrestler in the world, although he did beat out Luthez in some recent poll, well, 10 or 15 years ago, which I thought was quite humorous. But the guy had talent. I mean, there was one match he had against Harley Race in the afternoon. They went to a 60-minute draw. And then the same night they went to a different city and had another 60-minute draw, and they said it was completely different than the afternoon match. Now, that takes a lot of talent and stamina to pull something off like that.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing 2 one-hour draws, but hey, there's a good way to end the podcast today. Excuse me, 2 hours so far. Now, then we're having that Monday. Remember, we're still at 4:30. Okay. You know the deal while we're going. We're still at SummerLeo.com. We're putting a new blog tomorrow morning. Box the week while you're there. We're still at SummerLeo on Facebook page. We've got a lot of stuff. Don't forget to do this video. Radio. And I feel free to look me up on Twitter as well. I am at Brooks. What that is. And hey, if you stop by and just follow, thank you very much. We appreciate you doing that. But if you're missed out, I don't know how you work. I'm going to TuneIn.com and see how you can listen whenever you like.